Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner right here, The Mark Steiner Show, on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. This hour, we take another journey through The Mark Steiner Show archives. 4 years ago, Reverend Mark Kiyimba of Uganda graced our studios at WEAA. Reverend Kiyimba is the founder of the Unitarian Universalist Church in Uganda, where he's an activist for LGBT rights. His church runs an orphanage and a school for children infected with HIV/AIDS, and those children who've lost parents to that disease. He was joined in studio by the Reverend David Carl Olson, minister of the First Unitarian Church here in Baltimore, who hosted Reverend Kiyimba. And welcome to the studio, both of you. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
You know, when I heard you were coming to town, this is a very kind of interesting and kind of difficult subject in many ways. Just a few weeks ago, I guess, there was an article by Frank Mugisha, yes, in the New York Times, an op-ed piece, gay and vilified in Uganda. And he wrote about the murder, the bludgeoning to death of Uganda's best-known gay activist, David Kato, who was killed in his house. He wrote about how he, Frank was writing, Frank Mugisha was writing about how he, well, in his memory, he's not going to stop pushing. And it seems like a lot of gay and lesbian activists in Uganda are really standing up in the face of potential death threats to keep fighting for their rights. And I'm curious, just for you, as someone standing up in Uganda, how that affects your life.
It affects in many ways, but you should understand, just like Frank Mugisha put it, they're doing a good job, especially from the political side, to see that the gay community finds an integration within the entire community of Uganda. On my side, especially my fight has been on the spiritual level, to see how the church and the other social sectors are able to integrate the gay community. You should understand the fight, especially the hate crime, the introduction of the anti-homosexuality bill was also mostly started within the church, when the church started preaching so much against homosexuality and the exclusion of the gay people. So as a church, we felt that we were more so concerned to come in with another voice from the extreme evangelicals who were into with this force of preaching, using the Bible, and denying that homosexuality is unhuman, is an African, and things like that. So as a church, we needed to come in as a voice as a church, so that we can balance the two institutions.
Now, I heard today that you began your life in the church as an evangelical. Is that true?
Yes.
So tell us about that sojourn. You started as an evangelical minister and became and went to the Unitarian Church.
Well, the thing is, in Uganda, the Unitarianism has just been introduced. In other words, Unitarianism is more somebody being more liberal, more accepting, open mind, and open door. When I was still an evangelical pastor, I was bound by the Bible. So I had to read, I had to understand all issues just as the Bible says. So I had no space as Mark to be able to give my views from the human point of view. I had to be by the Bible, in spite of the fact that many times the Bible has gone astray. You know, the Bible has been around for over 2,000 years, mm-hmm, and so many things have moved forward for 2,000 years by now. So a lot of transition has come, so we need to have that transition as well as human beings.
So what was the transition for you? I mean, how did you first begin your life as an evangelical minister, and what changed you? What happened in your life that moved you to a different place?
Well, you should be very clear to understand from the biblical point of view is that whatever is written in the Bible is true. You are not supposed to take out any word, and you are not supposed to add. But logically, it's the same Bible at the same time that you see that preaches love, but does not preach universal love. I wanted to preach universal love disregarding who one is, or whether one is black or white, or whether rich, poor, or whether gay or lesbian. I wanted to preach that universal love. Within the Bible and the evangelical setup, love is limited. Mm. To the gay person, he should be killed. You know how the Bible was used to preach against the, in favor of slavery. I mean, that's not the Bible that I wanted to preach. I wanted to preach the Bible that has no demarcations and boundaries. But that's not the case. So that's what brought the transition for me. I wanted to have a church that is all inclusive. Men and women, rich, poor, black, white. I mean, people coming for fellowship. That's what I wanted.
Is that your church now in Kampala and Uganda? Is that your church?
You have just made an answer. It's not a question.
That is your church.
That's the church. Yeah.
So the history of this, I think, and that I'd like to kind of talk a bit about, because we read a lot about it. I mean, that there have been people who called into the show who have said things like, to be gay is not to be African, that it was imported by Europeans. And this is that belief is deep with many people. And I'd like you to talk a bit about that mindset, and where do you think that comes from?
Well, it depends which perspective you want to take it from.
Okay.
If you want to use the many people use several factors to support the argument. The reason why, like in Uganda, people say that homosexuality is not African, actually, the first people they saw a little bit open and practicing homosexuality were the people from the West. So that was the time of the colonialism and imperialism. That's when they saw that actually someone was engaged into the act. So they thought that homosexuality was just brought by the colonials to Uganda. But you should understand that homosexuality is not an act. It's not a behavior. It's not something that you just cohabit. It's something natural. It is something that is biological. Somebody is born, or that's the way somebody is. So it can't be something you imported, just like cars you import from Europe and you take to Uganda. Yeah, it's only that the experience of this was actually a first seen physically or vividly among the Europeans. So the people thought that maybe it has just been imported.
Well, one of the things that I've been reading is that. Let's take Uganda as example, that the move to kind of create these anti-homosexual laws in the modern era, in the last 20 years, 30 years in Uganda and in other parts of Africa, has really been pushed by some of the most extreme elements of the evangelical right in America, mm-hmm. with ministers coming over. But that's a story we very rarely hear.
Okay, I mean, it's very difficult when people have to say in trying to answer the same question of people saying that homosexuality is not African. Okay, if people are going to say that homosexuality was imported to Uganda or Africa by the Europeans, but at the same time we are seeing that homophobia has just also been imported by the Europeans as well, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, the evangelicals. Because until the evangelical pastors left the United States and they went to Uganda, homosexuality was there right from the 18th century, but there was no hate. There was no hate. It all started in 2009 when a pastor called Scott Lively from another organization called the Exodus for ex-gay people, and another group of people called the Focus on the Family. It includes even politicians, like one woman, Michelle Bachmann. She was part of those group of people that
the congresswoman who was running for president of the United States,
who dropped
Michelle
out.
Bachmann.
Yes, she was among that group of people that went to Uganda, and they supported this movement of hate in the disguise of procreation and protecting the family values, but which isn't true. So what we have now seen is that the church is actually taking a very strong role against homosexuality, using the Bible, when actually the Bible is not so much calling for the killing of people because of their sexual behaviors. That's not true.
But what's astonishing, though, is that what the articles that I was reading, there was an article in the Boise Weekly that I was reading, several articles in the Boise Weekly that I was reading, that the names of people who kind of came into Uganda and other countries, especially Uganda, but in other countries in Africa, to push this kind of anti-homosexual agenda, names, and I have them. I had no idea until I read the article. People like Ken Starr, who used to be the White House investigator and president of Baylor University, Pastor Rick Warren of Saddleback Church, Mark Tooley, Stephen Knoll from the Anglican Council. These people who really pushed this, and Congressman Imhoff from Oklahoma, Michelle Bachmann.
Yes.
I mean, and actually pushed to the point where this anti-homosexual law was written in Uganda that called for the execution of people who were gay.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when there was there's something you even didn't know. There was even a big promise from those people, the politicians and the evangelical pastors, to the government in my country that do not worry, even though President Obama would be able to cut off funding, we will be able to substitute that funding. So the push was so much. It had a big magnitude, not only just for force, but with a lot of money being poured there. People starting to go and make crusades in every town, collecting signatures, and then starting to call people, if you see somebody is gay, ban him or kill them. So actually it created an extreme fear up to this moment. Because when we tried to counter-attract that force that was calling for execution of gay people, then they introduced a newspaper which was called the Rolling Stone. That Rolling Stone was sponsored and paid for by politicians and evangelicals from this country of America.
From the United States.
From the United States. And they started to out all the gay people, which totally put in the lives of young people in danger. Because in Uganda, for example, when a person is outed and is young, 18, 20, he's still with parents, they had to chase them away. Schools had to forsake them, churches, workplaces. So, I mean, there was created another form of fear. And what people are now experiencing actually is that the AIDS was now an increase among the gay people because they started to fear to go to clinics and hospitals. Because when they introduced this bill, the bill was requiring a doctor to turn him, that patient, to the police if they find out that he's a gay man. So you disregard the pain and the disease that one has, and then you just call in the cops to come.
So can you describe, just for our listeners who only read this in the paper, what you perceive life is like for gay and lesbian and transgender people in your own country, in Uganda?
Well, depends in at the same time where one lives. But let's say one is in the city. First of all, that person should never and ever tell even a neighbor that I'm gay. There is no doubt whatsoever that a few people who are able to live a little bit open, like Frank Mugisha, cannot be able to live among the common people. They have to be able to live very exclusively. Because when the day people get to know that you are gay, they will be able to come and attack you. There is no doubt they will ban you and they'll ban your house. So if they get to know you are working, definitely as a matter of fact, you cannot be able to survive at any job in Uganda once they find out that you're gay. Let me give you an example. In 2009, 2010, when we were pushing to stop this bill, there was a lesbian who called in one of the radio stations in the morning, and she only called to try and educate about the conversation of the bill that was going on. The following day, the host of the radio station, the presenter who was in the studio, was suspended for just allowing a caller to call in and identify herself as a recipient. Two, the radio station was fined $1,200. And then it was finally told never to ever host such a kind of a conversation. Now, if such a public entity that is there for education cannot even be allowed for somebody to call in, think about a young man and a woman over there in their localities where they stay. The day they find out that one is gay, definitely you have to lose your life. So people live very secretive.
We are talking with Mark Kiemba, who is founded the Unitarian Universalist Church of Uganda, He is also the founder of the New Life School for children who have lost parents to HIV and AIDS. It's not just Uganda. I mean, when we interview and talk to people, it could be Nigeria, Uganda, Kenya, many nations in Africa have this kind of crusade against homosexuality. And it really seemed to have didn't exist, for the most part, the one I've been reading, thinking about you coming on the air, didn't exist in pre-colonial Africa. This was not, I mean, there were many nations I read about in pre-colonial Africa where the idea of a third sex existed, that people were not prosecuted. Well, there were no jails in Africa before the Europeans got there to start with. But I mean, this is really a creation of the post-colonial era.
Well, I think it's a creation of post-colonialism. I think it's also a reflection of the fact that there are people whose message about homophobia, whose message about human sexual norms and maybe even the less than human reality of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people, the message isn't sticking in this country in the way that it once did. And I just as there was a this is perhaps a new colonialism to take this reprehensible message and to subject African people to it. I'm appalled. I'm ashamed, and I'm also concerned. You know, I want to stand with Reverend Kiyimba, with his congregation, and with the gay lesbian folk that they love, and find a way that us for us here in the United States, where we have a little bit of privilege, thank you very much, and maybe a little more opportunity, that we have a way to be brothers and sisters in solidarity with that congregation and with those people.
Thank you.
Let's open the phones here. Whatever your thoughts, you're on the air. Michael of Baltimore.
Yes, Mark.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. First of all, it's important to know that there is an expert on this subject by the name of Dr. Judith Reisman. It's drjudithreisman.com, where she exposes the only science, in quotes, if not junk science, that's ever been brought to bear on this subject as a fraud. It's called Kinsey, the fraud of his research that was done that gave the only impetus to this behavior in America, which you're now trying to import to Uganda. If there's no science to it, and the guest was saying earlier that people are compelled to be that way because they're born that way, and the fact is that there's never been any psychological study. Even the APA admits that they've never found one iota of a fact that the people are born this way, then really what you're doing is what you may find in some sororities and fraternities these days who are going for this kind of perverted behavior, when they say that it's a matter of sexual preference. And that means it's not something which is in the genes. It's not something which somebody must do because he's born that way. Rather, it's just a matter of taste, personal taste. And since you are purporting to be from the Christian outlook on this matter, you may not be aware that there's something called the Divine Code. It's the Seven Commandments given to Noah and all his progeny. And that Divine Code prohibits any kind of extrafamiliar sexual behavior, and the penalty for it is death. So a person who engages in it may find that AIDS comes inevitably from it, because after all, God designed the world to work within natural laws. And this kind of behavior, just by its nature, has people falling victim to all kinds of diseases. So to even begin to import from the imperialist America Western values that will destroy the Ugandan people when they know better, you see that they go really...
Okay, Michael, let me let our guest respond. Mark?
He says his name is Michael.
His name is Michael.
Well, it depends. I don't want to understand exactly where you want to drive it from, but even in the recent years and in the ancient days, I mean, there has always been that form of denial, and sometimes people not wanting to understand exactly the root of some causes. If I want to take it from the the church point, my church history teaches me, in the 1544, in Rome, which was called the Church Council of Trenton, there was a meeting of bishops and cardinals and all the philosophers and lawyers. And at that time, the Roman Catholic Church, which was stretching all over, wanted to determine whether the blacks were human beings or animals. So there has always been those form of controversies where people don't understand. I mean, they were not even called black people. We're just called blacks. But they had to determine whether really they're humans or the animals. So when you look at this issue of sexuality, especially and homosexuality, and the misunderstanding by people saying even science hasn't proved, but some science has proved so. So it depends which angle are you trying to come into to approach the issue. And so that's my understanding. I don't know what is yours, is David?
Well, I just have to say that I think human sexuality is complicated and diverse. That's I think the human family and that nature herself is complicated and diverse. I do think that 20th and 21st century gay life is probably we're able to live out a life that's open with a culture and with politics and with its own sense of what is right, because in a way that might not have happened in earlier societies. Humankind is in a different place. Human society is organized a different way. It happens that there are a lot of options, and so part of my own gayness, I bet, is indeed a matter of taste. But I think a whole lot of my gayness is inherent, and whether it's in the genes or whether it's in experiences that I had in my mother's womb or whether it has to do with my birth order. And there are all kinds of indicators about how complicated gayness might be and how it might be predicted or denied. I think it's a complicated thing. To me, there is a notion that love exists in this universe, and to the extent that we're able to allow love to flourish and allow people to find meaning in their lives and in their relationships, that's what I want to promote.
Can I add something?
Please do.
If Michael is going to say that this is a behavior that or a device that people choose, why should people go and choose a behavior or a vice that almost everyone, apart from the gay people, crucify in the whole world? Why should they choose something so much that everybody doesn't understand and whatever they call it, instead of choosing what is? Why should somebody choose to be gay when he knows he's going to be crucified, abused, if it's just a matter of cohabiting or picking a behavior? Why? Why don't they pick to be the other way, where it's more comfortable?
We're listening back to my conversation about the fight for LGBT rights in Uganda with the Reverend Mark Kiyimba of the Unitarian Universalist Church in Uganda. This is from the Mark Steiner Show archives. And the Reverend David Carl Olson of Baltimore's First Unitarian Church also joined us for this conversation. We have to take a short break, but when we come back, it's time for the rest of this conversation. And on our way to break, I want to remind you that from school funding to testing, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. Welcome back. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show. This hour, we're listening back to a conversation I had with the Reverend Mark Kiyimba, who founded Uganda's Unitarian Universalist Church. His church runs an orphanage for children who have HIV/AIDS, whose parents were lost to that disease, and he's a major part of the fight for LGBT rights in Uganda. Reverend Kiyimba joined us in studio in 2012, along with the Reverend David Carl Olson of Baltimore's First Unitarian Church. And Bama, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. Welcome.
Let me say this as I will describe it. In traditional Africa,
north, south, east, and west. And it is shameful to hear this in the land of Idi Amin Dada. First of all, I know the Muslim population there would not put up with this type of behavior, and neither would the witches. Our traditional witches would strike out against this type of behavior, which is foreign to Africa. The Arabs tried it in Africa to do it, and they couldn't exceed well, even though them being the first to enslave the Africans with this filth. These Europeans have brought this kind of stuff there with them, particularly the French, those colonizers. And this type of behavior would never be accepted nowhere. Come and try it in Nigeria. In Uganda, you possibly have it. And it is because of bowing out to these foreign religions and accepting the kind of filth, talking about pagan Rome, the birthplace of this filth.
Reverend Kiamba?
Well, he still used the same thing. He calls it a behavior. I don't think there's anyone who would love to acquire behavior that is so much hated by everyone. So it's all about it's a behavior, still the same thing, that it was imported by Europeans and took it to Uganda. He said at first it were the Arabs who wanted to take it over there and failed. There's nobody who has ever imported homosexuality to Uganda or to Africa. It is something that has always been happening, but just that people just didn't know. So it's the time to come to terms with the reality of some of what is happening within the society, so that churches could change the message, politicians should change the message, the teachers, so that they can be able to teach in a rightful way, other than to teach in a wrong way by saying homosexuality was imported by the Europeans to Africa. I mean, there's been a lot of blame to the colonialists and the imperialists, but I think we have to come to understand that, like in my country, since the Europeans left, it's been over 50 years by now. I mean, since it's going to be 50 years this year. If we found out that homosexuality wasn't part of what we wanted, what they brought, we would have chased it away, just like we did to chase the Queen to go back to England. But if people are standing to be able to say, no, this is a human right, I think it's just time to come to the reality and the truthfulness of human nature.
Now, on the way back to the phones, I have to ask you this. Do you fear for your life, standing up the way you stand up in Uganda?
I fear, I can say 100%. But at the same time, there has to be people to stand in the amidst of the shadow. There have to be some people to be able to stand in. But, I mean, there is always fear. And the fear would always be everywhere. Even in your bedroom, there could be fear. There are people who can sleep in their houses and they fear their house and they choose to go to the street. And yet some people fear to be on the street and they go to their house. So it depends where you find sanctuary.
It does take people to stand up. Fear doesn't have to stop you, but it can fuel you.
Mark Steiner.
Leo, how are you?
And your guests. I'm wonderful. Happy New Year to all of you.
Same to you.
I listened to this conversation with much interest, much enthusiasm. I know that people say live and let live, and I understand that. I favor civil union protections that guarantee the economic rights of people of the same sex. But I must tell you that I'm under no obligation to embrace a redefinition of marriage or homosexuality. And that is because I was raised in a particular way. I was raised to believe, and I'm approaching it from a marriage standpoint, that people who marry are heterosexual. Now, one can argue that, and I know in this state of Maryland, the governor has said he's in favor of same-sex marriage because, in my judgment, he's exploiting an issue. I don't think he's in favor of it at all, but I think it's good for politicians. It's good to vote. And so people have got to be mindful of the exploitation aspect of this issue in its entirety. It's an abomination for a straight man, a man who's married to a woman, to, in my judgment, to have five other women or whores on the side. That is also an abomination. Now, one can argue I think we need to stand up for the right things, And I think we need to understand that this is going to be an eternal struggle of people who are raised in a particular tradition. They should hold to their tradition to the extent that someone can persuade them otherwise, perhaps. But we've got to fight for justice from our perspective. And I don't say that, Mark, out of hatred. You understand?
I do.
I'm not hating anybody. I would not allow violence to be meted out to anyone because of their sexual preference. I would disapprove of that. I would want those people prosecuted. But by the same token, I have a right to object to same-sex marriage by virtue of what was drummed into me as a child. And I'm liberal. I understand other people, and I love other people. Everybody's got some homosexuals in their home or their family or friends or somebody knows homosexuals. So that's
okay.
Let me let
Mark respond.
Okay. Very good.
Thanks, Leo.
What's his name?
Leo.
Leo. There are some things we need to come to understand, but it may be difficult to understand them, especially if you don't know, if you have not studied well or try to understand some history. There is a saying that if you know your history, then you need to know where you come from. The issue of marriage equality, especially for the gay people, state of Maryland, where now I know there's going to be a vote for gay equality. But the thing is that there is an opposition that a man cannot be married to another man, and that's not marriage. It is not the first time that people have been denying marriage in such circumstances. If you understand from the slavery point, from the time, there was a time when slaves were not allowed to marry. There were opposition. Because according to the laws of that time and the perspective and the understanding, it was actually unacceptable to see a slave marrying. But people had to go beyond that. And I remember there was also another time when a black person wasn't allowed to marry a white person. And it was illegal. And the understanding of everybody who was there at that time, it was unacceptable. How can a white person marry a black person? Or how can a black person marry a white person? But people had to make a transition, and they went beyond all those barriers of inequality so that they could reach to the fullness of equal rights to every person. Today, I don't think it stumbles anybody to say a black person married a white one. No. Because finally, people allowed to make a transition to understand. It's not going to be a bigger problem. The problem is that now the law has not permitted. As soon as it does so, everybody will come to terms with it. So our prayer will be is that the vote here in the state of Maryland would go positive, and the people agree to have same-sex equality, marriage, whereby a man and a woman and a woman, and whoever that is able to marry to each other, then that would be finished. The next generation will not even find it something to debate on.
And Aaron, in Catonsville, you're on the air.
Hello, my brother.
Hi, Aaron.
How are you doing, my brother from Uganda? If you could see me, my hat is off to you. I support the right of every human being to find the partner of their choice and to embrace in marriage. I don't understand. In a world marked with pollution, war, racial hatred, where children go to bed hungry and women go to bed starving, and there's always a threat of a war here and there, to get worked up over two human beings who want to embrace in a way that is different from my way of embracing bothers me. So, my brother, go in love. Stay strong. You were a good person when you got up this morning. You'll be just as good a person when you go to sleep tonight. My heart and my love go out to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's go to Michael in Waverly.
Hi.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. I had a question. I wondered if your guest had any information as to the influence that former Attorney General John Ashcroft may have had in influencing Uganda's draconian legislation as a test case for other areas, or if I had heard something to the effect of other radio shows.
Good question, Michael. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I, I'm The only information that, and I will be able to bend back to Mark as well.
Oh, sure, sure.
Is just because primarily my investigation and work has been so much within the spiritual realm to see that the church is not infiltrated by people who preach as hate. So that's why my investigation is very clear with organizations like Focus on the Family, Scott Lively, and the Exodus. But I think Mark has mentioned something like that.
There was actually an article I had, one of the many articles I read in preparation for Mark's coming on our program. This was written by Edwin Okongo, who is a Ugandan, and wrote about, I'll just read you the first paragraph and give the names of the people who he said helped with this thing. He said, there's a joke among Africans about how colonialism began. A Christian missionary came with a Bible in hand, told our ancestors to bow their heads for prayer, and when they opened their eyes, their land was gone. Today, the same can be said about the African constitutions. And he goes on to write about that American religious right-wingers are flocking to Africa and are helping pass legislation criminalizing homosexuality throughout Africa. And he mentions what you just mentioned, Republican senators like Jim Imhoff, Tom Coburn, John Ensign, Jim DeMint, Sam Brownback, and congressmen like Mike McIntyre, and this group called The Family, which has been written about, that is trying to push this legislation throughout Africa. The only African country so far that has stood up to it is South Africa, which stood up giving gays and lesbians full rights in their constitution. And it is a battle. I mean, people are not just being – it's not just here where we're arguing about whether or not gays and lesbians should have the right to marry. We're talking about in Uganda whether gays and lesbians have the right to live and not be killed and prosecuted and put in jail for life, and if this law passes, to be executed.
And whether people are not required to turn them in.
Right, turn them in.
And whether people are not allowed to befriend, to worship with, to pray for. I mean, this is an uncivilized, unacceptable, not a way we need to be with each other.
And I understand the legislation was withdrawn, but it could be reintroduced in the Ugandan parliament. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is still in the parliament.
It's still in the parliament.
It is.
Let's go to Nancy. You're on the air.
Thank you. It's good to be able to talk, to enter this conversation.
Well, welcome.
One of the things that I realize as I listen to Reverend Kimba talk about what it's like in Uganda is how fortunate I am to be in a country where we sometimes and should all the time let people live in a way that they want to live as long as it doesn't have an impact on anybody else. And the whole notion that marriage is between a man and a woman, the Bible says various things, assumes a Christian or Judeo-Christian foundation. And in this country, we say that religion is not a determinant of anything, and yet that seems to be the argument for so many people who are not willing to let those of us who are gay and lesbian be who we are, love who we want to love, whether or not it's a choice or inborn. It really has no impact on that person at all. So it's just, I feel fortunate to be in the U.S., and yet I know that we could be in a much better place than we are at this point.
Nancy, thank you for your thoughts.
Thank you.
We are lucky in many ways to be here and not someplace else. And that is true on many levels.
I want to argue with Nancy only about one thing. And, of course, there is not a unitary definition of marriage in the darn Bible. There are so many different expressions of who human beings are with one another. I mean, if one wants to, let's join the Mormons. I mean, they're right, or the ancient Mormons. Polygamy is the standard.
In the Bible, it is.
Absolutely.
Yes, it is. Polygamy is the standard in the Bible.
Yeah. Give me a break.
We do forget that, you know. So that I've always wanted to say that to Rick Santorum. I said, but it's in your Bible. 410-319-8888. Tori, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I was calling in. I'm disappointed when you read off some of the names. The first I'm calling in to offer my support, which I still am, because I think anyone dates that is just their personal business. Like, just like the other caller said, we got so much going on.
Yes.
People always want to be so controlling. And how can you even say, claim that you're a Christian? Like, I personally know Tom Coburn, and I know Jim DeMint. And I think I'm going to go dig up some pictures where they've campaigned at the church back home that is a gay church. Because I'm just like, really? I mean, I know sometimes they do some extreme legislation, but I did not know that they're responsible for the legislation over there. And that's disappointing because, I mean, how could you be responsible for legislation that could literally end someone's life? Instead of focusing on legislation of real crimes and real killers and real evil people here in this country. So to the gentleman that's on the phone and to everyone else that's in the, you know, the lesbian, gay, transgendered community, you have my support. And I, you know, I just condemn anyone for any hatred. I mean, if you don't like it, don't look at it. You don't have to pay attention. Just respect people for who they are, whether they're gay, whether they're lesbian, whether they're black, green, or purple. I mean, I just, you know, how can you, it's just amazing how people, like, one minute they're all about love, and the next minute, you know, 2 seconds later, they can turn around and hate someone just because, oh, I don't like that. Well, that's fine. You don't have to like it. You don't even have to live with it. That's their life and their business, and worry about you and your own.
Tori, thank you for your thoughts.
Thank you so much.
I guess another caller on here. We only have about 5 minutes left. Unless you were you about to say something, Mark? Go ahead,
yeah,
please.
Yes, there's something I wanted to say, especially about the what was in the and what is in the bill that is to be introduced in the parliament. This is where it goes extreme to me, because if all human beings are the same, there should be no distinction. Mm-hmm. This bill, there's what it calls for aggravated homosexuality. And the aggravated homosexuality is calling for death penalty. So, but where does it come to be aggravated homosexuality? This is a situation where a gay man rapes another man. This is where a gay man sleeps with a minor, somebody who is underage. And this is the time where, I'm using the word gay man, but where a homosexual sleeps and they infect another with AIDS.
Pardon me, sorry.
I want to let you know, Mark, about the AIDS in my country, for example.
Please.
AIDS has been in Uganda since 1982. That's when they discovered AIDS. So many people recklessly have been sleeping and infecting others with AIDS, but there has never been a legislation introduced in the parliament saying that when you're a straight person, you sleep with another person and you infect intentionally AIDS with another person, they call for death sentence. No. But when a gay person does that, that is aggravated and is calling for death sentence. I mean, where do we find equality even in an issue like that one? There are so many people who rape. But as long as one is a straight person, he's free to go to the courts of the law and argue the case. For a gay man being caught or found that he raped, there isn't anything to do with that. You don't have any time to court, but the penalty is death sentence. The same applies to the minors. So many people are sleeping with minors in my country, but because they are straight people, they go away with it. But to a gay person, that is aggravated. So if we are going to have laws, let the laws be just, because all people feel the same pain when something goes wrong to themselves. So that's where also it had to be understood that this bill, it is not just targeting actually also just homosexuals, but it's almost targeting everyone. The bill is calling for parents to turn in their sons and their daughters to the police within 24 hours upon knowledge that one is gay or is a lesbian. The bill is calling for criminal proceedings and prosecution to any service provider to the gay community, or whether you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, you're a pastor, whatever you do to help the gay community is illegal. So, I mean, it's not just targeting only actually gay people, but it's targeting the whole community of Uganda, which is something going to be a hate against each other person.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves, Manifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Will Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. And to podcast the Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org, or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.